We live in an age of corporate titans. A handful of companies, Google, Amazon, Facebook, shape what we see, buy, and believe. Airlines, pharmaceuticals, telecommunications. Nearly every industry has consolidated into a few massive players. This isn't happenstance. It's the result of 40 years of deliberately weakened antitrust enforcement, recreating the conditions of America's first Gilded Age. The parallels are striking. Extreme inequality, corporate dominance, populist fury. History doesn't repeat, but it certainly rhymes. Between 1895 and 1904, over 2,200 manufacturing companies merged into just 157 corporations. J.P. Morgan and John D. Rockefeller led this consolidation, creating monopolies in steel, oil, railroads, sugar, and tobacco. Within a decade, America's competitive marketplace had become corporate fiefdoms. The monopolists justified their conquest through social Darwinism, claiming competition caused wasteful instability. Rockefeller compared Standard Oil to the American beauty rose, produced in its splendor and fragrance only by sacrificing the early buds which grow up around it. Crushing competitors wasn't ruthless, it was nature's way. This contradicted America's founding principles of widely distributed property ownership. The Boston Tea Party itself was an anti-monopoly protest against the British East India Company. Yet by 1900, Carnegie's fortune reached today's equivalent of $310 billion, while workers earned $1 to $2 daily. This inequality triggered resistance through organized labor and populist movements. Congress responded with the 1890 Sherman Antitrust Act, making monopolization a felony. Under President McKinley, however, the law remained toothless. Louis Brandeis watched the trust movement destroy his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky, where his parents had built a successful grain business. As a young lawyer, he witnessed local merchants and manufacturers fall victim to predatory corporate practices, an experience that shaped his vision of economic democracy, where individuals could succeed through merit rather than concentrated financial power. For Brandeis, economics was fundamentally about human development. The right to life, he declared, should be understood as the right to live and not merely to exist. True freedom required protection from both government oppression and private economic domination. He recognized that for most Americans, genuine autonomy depended more on immediate economic conditions, work hours, job security, workplace dignity, than on abstract constitutional freedoms. His battle against J.P. Morgan's New Haven Railroad monopoly crystallized these views. Through meticulous investigation, Brandeis exposed an elaborate web of deception, bribery, and fraud that devastated New England's transportation system. This experience cemented his faith in decentralized systems and inspired his phrase, "curse of bigness." He observed how trusts not only exterminated smaller businesses, but concealed profound inefficiencies behind their massive scale. As he warned Congress in 1911, "A corporation may be too large to be the most efficient instrument of production. It may be too large to be tolerated among the people who desire to be free." When Theodore Roosevelt became president after McKinley's assassination in 1901, J.P. Morgan reportedly slumped into a chair exclaiming, "This is sad, sad, very sad news." Unlike McKinley, who had honored Morgan with White House dinners while the financier violated antitrust law, Roosevelt believed the public should rule over corporations, not vice versa. Roosevelt's antitrust enforcement was fundamentally political. He saw the Sherman Act as essential to democracy itself, ensuring elected representatives maintained authority over economic power. His most significant action targeted Standard Oil's 25-year monopoly. After a two-year investigation, his Justice Department filed a 170-page complaint detailing exclusionary railroad cartels, pipeline monopoly abuse, and predatory pricing. In 1911, the Supreme Court ordered Standard Oil's breakup into 34 parts. Surprisingly, within a year, the combined value of these parts doubled, and within several years, increased fivefold. While large factories produce goods more cheaply at volume, these advantages eventually plateau as firms require more managers and complex control systems that create inefficiencies. The Standard Oil breakup proved that monopolies often destroy rather than create value, a lesson we've forgotten in our rush to celebrate corporate giants. In the post-war era, antitrust was deemed essential to democracy. Kennedy's antitrust chief called it second only to questions of survival in the face of nuclear weapons. This stemmed from fascist regimes like Nazi Germany, where monopolies such as IG Farben helped bring Hitler to power. An intellectual counter-revolution emerged at the University of Chicago, where Aaron Director developed ideas that would upend antitrust enforcement. His most influential student was Robert Bork, who underwent a religious conversion in Director's class. Bork's revolutionary claim, consumer welfare, defined narrowly as lower prices, had always been antitrust's true intent. This meant plaintiffs had to prove behavior raised prices, ignoring broader concerns about economic and political power. Despite contradicting 70 years of precedent, Bork repackaged his approach as judicial restraint. In reality, laissez-faire, economics asserting markets were sovereign and immune from democratic politics. By the early 2000s, the Supreme Court embraced this narrow interpretation, with Justice Scalia declaring in 2004 that monopoly was an important element of the free market system. The consequences? 75% of American industries experienced increased concentration between 1997 to 2012, with average markup rates rising from 18% to 67% above marginal costs. In the 1990s, the internet seemed immune to monopoly, as companies like AOL and MySpace rose and fell rapidly. Tech giants appeared benevolent, Google offering free search, Amazon selling cheap books, Facebook building a global community. But a few firms, Google, Facebook, Amazon, grew dominant through network effects and data advantages. Google controlled 90% of searches. Amazon captured nearly half of e-commerce. Facebook's acquisitions exemplified this consolidation. Instagram purchased with just 13 employees. WhatsApp bought when it threatened Facebook's messaging dominance. Regulators absurdly concluded Facebook and Instagram weren't competitors. The tech giants amassed unprecedented acquisitions. Facebook, 67, Amazon, 91, Google, 214. Where buyouts weren't practical, they employed aggressive cloning. Facebook's Stories copying Snapchat, Instagram's Reels mimicking TikTok. These companies achieved what previous monopolists could only dream of: control over the digital infrastructure of modern life itself, protected by high barriers to entry, massive data advantages, and network effects that make competition nearly impossible. The path forward requires returning to antitrust's roots, not as technical economic regulation, but as a fundamental constitutional check on private power. This means raising bars for giant mergers, transparent democratic reviews, and reviving the trustbuster tradition. The AT&T breakup proved how proper execution transforms stagnant markets into dynamic ones, unleashing telecommunications innovation. We must abandon the narrow consumer welfare focus and return to Brandeis's 1918 standard, assessing whether conduct promotes competition or whether it suppresses or destroys competition. This protection of competition test safeguards a process rather than maximizing an abstract value measured only in short-term price effects. Tech giants now know us better than our closest friends, while a handful of corporations control millions of economic destinies. Monopoly power threatens both economy and democracy. We face the choice our ancestors confronted. Will we be a nation of free and equal citizens or subjects in corporate feudalism? Democracy requires eternal vigilance, including vigilance against private tyranny masquerading as innovation. The tools exist in century-old laws. We need only the courage to use them.